Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I am your host, Kyle, and joining me today is Thomas Blymuth. Am I saying that right? Blymuth?
Yes, it's almost correct. So Thomas Blymuth.
Thomas. Okay. Joining me today is Thomas Blymuth, crypto trader and fund manager for Anbruggen Capital. Now, before we get to know our guests, let's get that promotional stuff out of the way. So, Thomas, if you got anything you want to plug or promote, anything you want to share, go ahead and let's get that out here.
I mean, the whole podcast is about myself and Anbruggen Capital, right? So right. I'm just happy to speak about that.
Where's the website?
It's anbruggen.capital.
Anbruggen.capital. Okay, I'll make sure we have links in the episode description so people can check that out. If anybody listening has any suggestions or questions for future guests like Lucas in Sweden, please send them to us. You can do that via email at bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com, or you can join our free Discord server, or just DM us on Twitter at financialinept1. All those links will be in the episode description, so you can check them out at your own convenience. But now that we got the business done, let's get to know our guest. Thomas, you said you're living in the Philippines?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm originally from Austria, but I've been living in the Philippines for almost 9 years now.
Austria, okay. I was trying to place the accent. It did not sound Nordic, like Lucas.
No, it's German, exactly. Yeah. So it's technically German.
I've actually been to Austria once. I was doing a class when I was in the steel industry up in Udine, Italy, and it was like a two-week trip there, so I took an overnight train to Klagenfurt and spent the day checking it out. Yeah, I really liked that little town.
You went there in summer or winter?
It was like April, so it was kind of more spring.
Spring. That's good.
It wasn't cold, but it was the beer was amazing. That's all I really remember. So what are you doing in the Philippines then? Why'd you end up settling down there?
Yeah, so I will just quickly explain where I'm coming from, right? So I have my background is a business major, so I used to study international business in Austria, and then I did study exchange in Singapore, Thailand, and then I started to discover Southeast Asia a little bit more from a traveling perspective. I didn't see myself end up working there, but after I graduated, I moved to Ireland to work for Google. And yes, it was a great company, obviously, but after 1 year in Ireland, I really started to miss Southeast Asia again. So I was starting to look for opportunities. And then I started working for Lazada in the Philippines, which is one of the biggest e-commerce companies in the region. And then after a while, I got to know one of the shareholders of Unbroken Capital. And that's actually also the time when I started to get more interested in cryptocurrencies, because he has been in crypto since 2013 already. Mm-hmm. And that's also when 2018, actually, I joined Unbroken Capital as the chief asset management officer.
So you've always been in the markets, but at least since school, some way, shape or form in the financial world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been interested by volatility in general. Mm-hmm. So during my time at the university, I played around with stock market simulators because I didn't have the funds yet, right? Then once I graduated, I started investing in the stock market and I was drawn into penny stocks, which wasn't all too successful, but a big learning lesson for me.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I would say the first time I was more successful was when I started looking into IPOs, such as mm-hmm. Alibaba IPO, Facebook IPO back in the days when I started investing.
I traded the Alibaba IPO, actually.
You did, right? Yeah. It's good. It's a good trading stock. I mean, if you look at it now, right, it's almost down back to where it came from, right, 10 years ago. So mm-hmm. as an investor, I believe it wouldn't have been too successful anymore. But anyway, so this is long time ago for me. So I fully moved into crypto, actually, since 2017.
Then you said volatility was the thing that interested you most in the markets?
Exactly. So I wouldn't say I've been a fundamental investor in the beginning, although mm-hmm. I'm much more focused on fundamentals now than I was back in the days. But I really started as a technical trader with very simple technical analysis, drawing trend lines, drawing chart patterns, those kind of things, which I believe in the stock market has been relatively successful. Mm-hmm. Crypto is a different story because obviously the volatility is even more extreme. And I would also say that the market is slightly more manipulated.
It's interesting that volatility is the thing that you keyed in on, but I would have assumed that you'd probably spend more time trading options, since that's kind of like the key component to being profitable with them, is having a good understanding of volatility.
Yeah, I agree, yes. But options market is not very established in the altcoin market, for example. Mm. So I'm also very interested in certain altcoins, in crypto especially. And I believe Deribit, for example, one of the biggest platforms for options trading, they offer options, obviously, for Bitcoin and Ethereum. Not so much for some of the altcoins, which is especially what we're looking into as a fund management company.
Okay, so does the 24-hour market for crypto, is that part of what entices you to stick in with that?
Yeah, I would say it's one of the biggest challenges, actually.
Oh, really?
It's very good for, obviously, for liquidity, right? You have liquidity all around the clock. Mm-hmm. The challenge there is, obviously, as a manual trader, many times you go to sleep, right? And then you wake up and the price might be up or down 10%. So that's right. Something that we have learned as a company. I can explain a little bit more where we came from, right? What we did as a company in the beginning until now. But I believe discretionary trading and the challenges with the 24/7 market has definitely been some of the learning lessons that we experienced in the early days.
Well, I do want to, before we get too far out, you talked about getting like kind of cutting your teeth on the penny stocks and basically that ended up just being tuition that you're paying. I'm curious, like, what some of the takeaways were that you learned from that experience? Like, how did that shape the way you trade today?
Yeah, penny stocks for me has not been successful, I believe, because many times it was a pump and dump. Mm. So you went into the market, right, when you see an initial bump, but many times you're just too late already, and then your longs at some point get stopped out. And the difference there is, since some of the penny stocks don't actually have fundamentals, right, which is also why I said I started paying more attention to fundamentals now, they mm-hmm. just never recover. So many times the market goes up in waves, right? You have the first wave, the third wave, the fifth wave, and so on and so forth. In penny stocks, many times it was just the first wave, right? Then you start to get the attention, right? And you're waiting for the next leg up, and it just never happens. That's different in crypto to some extent, because what you're looking for example, in a breakout strategy is long accumulation, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might trade, for example, the retest of the accumulation range, and then you're waiting for the third wave, and that's something that in penny stocks just many times never happened. I believe that's very different in at least cryptocurrencies that you consider fundamentally sound, that indeed have a use case.
I mean, definitely having more liquidity in a product makes it less susceptible to being manipulated like that, I would think. But I imagine you probably come across that a lot trading cryptos if you're not trading just like the main established ones. And looking through, you know, some of the stuff on your website, it looks like you are looking for some of those diamonds in the roughs.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the Solanas when nobody's talking about it, or like some of those.
Yeah, exactly. The main difference is really, so we have two teams internally in Unbroken Capital. We have a research team, and then we have our portfolio management team. And that's basically what the research team does, right? So they look into the fundamentals of the project. They look who is behind the team, what's the actual narrative, does the project even have a product already, which again is different from penny stocks, right? Many times it's nothing much behind the ticker, which in crypto is also the case, right? So we try to identify those that do indeed have a potential to gain some real world traction, and only those that pass our criteria actually get traded or invested by the portfolio management team. And then that's the ones that we try to accumulate. So we're not really a trading company, right? We're much more of an investment company, which then again in crypto, an investment time frame is not like Warren Buffett style, like, you know, buying
right, forever. Not 20 years.
That's not what we do, right? But more on a cycle basis. So in crypto, we look at 4-year cycles, and there's always a bear market, which usually for Bitcoin lasts about 1 year. For many of the altcoins, it lasts 2 to 3 years. And then the markup phase for altcoins is usually, at least historically, has been 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we try to position ourselves during the bottom formation. And indeed, what I mentioned already, right, we do need to see some follow through. If you're not able to accumulate in the bottom range, then at least you should be able to position yourself during that initial retest on a higher time frame.
That makes sense. So talk to me about like how you manage risk with some of these products, because if you get yourself into a sizable position, it's got to be pretty difficult to unload that if you need to get out, if something, you know, catastrophic happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two things, right? So as a trader, you manage the positions individually. You have a stop loss in place. You apply some basic technical analysis and so on and so forth. As I mentioned already, that can be tricky because obviously the market makers and the whales, they know exactly where the liquidation levels are, where the invalidation levels are, and so on and so forth. So I feel like there's no other market that gets invalidated so many times that you see, for example, just a quick tick down before the actual move up happens, right? So many times there is a stop loss hunting. Mm-hmm. So our risk management is much more on the portfolio management or on portfolio level. So we have, for example, strict rules when it comes to position sizing. We have strict rules when it comes to diversification. We have rebalancing in place. And we are obviously used to certain drawdowns in the portfolio, right? But what's important for us is to manage the drawdowns on portfolio level, not so much on position level. And we're looking for certain tokens that go up a lot more, basically right, that the winners can beat the or compensate for the losers.
So are there any strategies or anything like any different tax you have to take when you're trying to get a position filled? Are you trading any of these coins that have low trading volume to where like people would notice you accumulating?
Yeah, so I would say TVOP is your best friend when it comes to low liquidity tokens.
What is that? Say
that. Time weighted average price, right? So okay. TVOP is one of the other types that we use a lot, but we also work with institutional brokers, right? So we can have a chat with them about which tokens we plan to accumulate, right? So it's not just manual execution from our end, but we can also trade OTC if that's what it takes.
So it's not just a guy sitting at a computer then?
It can be anything, right? So it really depends on the tokens. It depends on which exchange we use. And again, it depends what we do now versus what we did 5 years ago, right? So we came a long way. Obviously, we traded very manually in the beginning, right? Just with your basic Binance accounts, with manual execution and so on and so forth. So there have been years and years of learnings that came into what we do nowadays. And obviously we work more with institutional brokers now than what we did in the past. But still, liquidity is a big issue in the industry, right? Especially when you identify tokens that you think you're early on. And that's why it's important for us to accumulate over either longer periods of time or with the respective order types. But there are indeed tokens that we would want to buy, right? But at the end of the day, it does not pass our criteria. Because it's not just accumulation. You can be very patient when it comes to accumulating a token. But if there is a black swan event, right, and you want to get rid of the token very fast, then obviously that would cause a massive drawdown to your portfolio. If then suddenly you don't have the time anymore to sell it in small tranches, right? So that's something you have to consider. And even if you're in the position already, we need to constantly monitor how the liquidity develops.
Yeah, you mentioned like diversification. Can you kind of walk me through like what that looks like? Like, are you diversifying across multiple cryptos, or are you diversifying across multiple digital assets? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't talk about any other asset classes in Unbroken Capital. And indeed, there's a high correlation between all cryptos, but there are still differences among certain sectors. So yes, you have times where only Bitcoin goes up, you have times where only altcoins go up, you have times where pretty much everything goes down. But there's definitely, when you look into more details, there are times where only Ethereum-based tokens go up, right? There's other times where only Solana-based tokens go up. And then you have sub-sectors. So you have, for example, layer one blockchain tokens, you have gaming tokens, you have meme coins, you have also AI, for example, which right now had experienced a big hype. And these are not as correlated one to another. So that's why we have to diversify. But of course, overall, I mean, the crypto market is correlated, right? And there we look much more as a season on a seasonality. Like I said already, bull market, bear market, accumulation. These are the common themes.
That makes sense, I think. Let's talk about some of the other factors that can impact crypto prices. Like, I would think that energy would probably be one, like the cost of power in wherever the place it's being mined. So, like, what are some of the other things that maybe have an impact on crypto's prices? Maybe not just like short term, but also long term.
Yeah. So, quickly to touch on the point on energy. So, I do agree it's definitely one of the factors. As we know, right, Bitcoin is getting mined, and energy cost is very expensive in some countries, right? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, every 4 years you have what we call the Bitcoin halving, where the last halving actually just happened a couple of days ago. Obviously it affects the profitability of miners, right? So miners are accumulating Bitcoin by the by mining the tokens, but then at the same time they have their expenses to pay, right? So they are in a very favorable position when the price of Bitcoin goes up, but they are under a lot of pressure when the price of Bitcoin goes down. And then at the same time, every 4 years they earn less and less Bitcoin, right? So they need for the price to go up to some extent. And at some point, if they are not profitable anymore, right, or even they have to shut down, then obviously that's additional selling pressure that hits the market. So that's definitely one of the challenges. Or if mining a certain token becomes not profitable for them anymore, right, then they might just move to another token and then also probably dump the ones that they already mined from that particular token.
Yeah, because people are mining, they're not holding that. They're probably selling it immediately as soon as they get it in order to cover their costs, right?
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, there's times, right, where they can strategically try to hold because they also expect the price of a certain token to go up. So they definitely trade around the holdings, but they are not in it for the fundamentals of the underlying tokens, right? Or even if they are, they have a business to sustain. So it's at the end of the day, it's a rational decision for them to sell. Yeah, then other factors, I mean, it really depends on the tokens, but I would say, especially for less liquid tokens, is probably big holders, right? Mm-hmm. So you have certain tokens where majority of the supply might be held by just a few wallets where you don't know who is behind it, right? But since everything is on the blockchain, you can at least track which are the biggest token holders. And if, you know, other people, so them selling, for example, might affect the price directly because obviously it puts pressure on the price, indirectly as well because other people also track those tokens, and then the rumor spread, right? Okay, biggest holder sold the tokens. I need to get out, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes this can cause a domino effect.
Panic.
Exactly. And so it's very important for us also to look into the tokenomics. So it's obviously more favorable for us to invest in tokens where the supply is more widely distributed and not just controlled by a few anonymous players. But then there's other factors. Market cycles, like I said already, right? Obviously, in Bitcoin, the halving really has set the tone for these what we call 4 year cycles. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to sustain any longer, right? Now we have spot ETFs for Bitcoin approved. More and more Wall Street institutional TradFi players enter the market. I don't know if that's going to disrupt the 4 year cycles, but so far it has been very consistent that Bitcoin went up 3 years straight, which is always followed by a bear market. And so far, I mean, the trend hasn't broken. So even up until now, even this year, Bitcoin is upright. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it should be up again next year. And then a bear market should happen again in 2026. So we have yet to see if that's going to play out again or if the correlation to traditional markets is going to go up. we have yet to see.
You mentioned the institutional, what was the right word for that? The institutional adoption, I think, would probably be the right way to say that, with the ETFs opening up. I would think that that would cause less volatility in your markets more than anything else. I would think that that would act more as a, like a price stabilizer. Do you see that as being an issue going forward then, if the volatility is what attracts you to it?
No, absolutely. I mean, I agree. It's definitely a valid theory, and I think it's going to happen as well. Especially because the market cap of crypto went up anyway, so it might even happen without the without institutions entering.
Right.
But I agree, they have the tools to manage volatility, right? They might not be interested for price to move too much, for example, over the weekend where the ETFs don't trade, right? But yeah. Bitcoin obviously keeps trading. But there's always other tokens, right? So that's exactly where we're coming in. We are still holding Bitcoin, right? Sometimes we're holding Bitcoin to a large extent because we believe Bitcoin is going to outperform at a certain time. But our, the core strength of us is really to identify other tokens that we believe can outperform Bitcoin. So I don't see that volatility there going down. And one more comment there. So it's actually very interesting. So yes, I believe that the ETF approval long-term is going to cause less volatility, but in fact, right after the ETFs got approved, right? So Bitcoin went from around 40,000 to almost 70,000 in right. a matter of weeks. So actually, the actual approval of or the actual launch, I have to say, caused a spike in volatility. But obviously, that could be just a repricing, right? So it's that back would, to the yeah. real.
As they have to value. Fill out their portfolios, there's probably going to be a lot exactly. more buying during that period.
So it might be temporary, but yeah. at least for now, the volatility went up, not down.
Yeah. You also mentioned something else too. No, you didn't mention that. It was another thing that I was thinking of. You remember when China banned the mining of cryptos? Were there any adverse effects seen because of that? Like they're not the only ones too. I think there's been a couple of places that have banned the mining in their countries.
Yeah, so this definitely caused an... Yeah, so I think at some point China was mining more than 50% right, of total crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot... I mean, the main beneficiary was actually the US. But at the end of the day, Bitcoin always gets mined somewhere. It does not really affect the market too much in the long term. It's still the same.
How did that benefit the US?
Because a lot of mining went to the US, right? So I think a lot of mining rigs were set up in Texas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say, I mean, obviously I'm from Europe, so I'm not the expert there, but I don't believe that the electricity in the US is the cheapest, right? But probably US just really has a good infrastructure, right? They have good access.
Depends on where you're at too. Like the price can be pretty, it can change pretty drastically depending on which state you're in.
Okay. But definitely now US is, if not the main, but one of the biggest players when it comes to mining.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your selection process or your research process. Like what are some of the things that you look for when you are trying to identify a crypto that you think has potential to outperform the rest of the market?
Yeah, so it's a bit of top-down. So we look at the sectors first, right? So we don't look straight for tokens. You look for which are the main narratives in the market right now, which mm-hmm. you mentioned already right now. It's AI, for example. So there's a lot of hype around AI, right, which started in the stock market with NVIDIA, right, outperforming pretty much everything.
Right.
And then there was a large spillover from that narrative into crypto. So a lot of projects right now work also on AI products. And then within AI segments, we look for tokens that actually have a use case. So I would say one of the main learnings from 2017, actually quite some time ago, which was one of the biggest alt seasons that crypto has ever experienced, was what we call the ICO boom.
Mm-hmm.
The main problem back then was a lot of projects only had a white paper. So they looked good on paper. They had a lot of promises, but they never actually launched a product.
Mm.
So one of the main decision-making criteria for us is immediately to look into the actual promise and whether they can fulfill that promise and also the roadmap. So to what extent, even if there's a good promise, right, to what extent do they deliver? Is there actually an application that is already live, right? Is there an application that we can test,
mm-hmm.
At least in the beta stage, right? So we have people that also have a software development background. They are very capable about looking into the code bases, if that's what it takes, but especially testing the product itself. And then there's a lot of data that we can analyze right on the quantitative side. So we can see the usage of certain applications. We can see the number of transactions. We can see those trending over time, whether they go up or down, right? Then we can look into relative valuation. So we can see within the sector who is growing or losing market share. other than that, we look into who is the team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some projects are even anonymous, right? Which makes it difficult for us to evaluate.
Right.
Then you can see who are the investors, right? So if there are some VCs behind a certain project that already have obviously a good track record of investing early stage, then that gives additional credibility. And yeah, there's a lot of other metrics. So we have a whole framework, and only if that, only if a certain token passes those criteria, only then the portfolio management team even starts looking at the token and start talking about how to accumulate the token, how to position, which position size, and so on and so forth.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You talked a bit about the use cases there, and that's always something that's kind of, I have a hard time wrapping my head around what the actual applications of some of the technology would be. Can you talk me through what are some of the coolest projects that you've seen or that you've tried to invest in? What are they trying to do with it?
Yeah. So for me, I think one of the biggest use cases of crypto in general is DeFi. Mm-hmm. So the idea of DeFi is basically to enable people to use financial services without any third party. As you know, right, dealing with banks can be very inefficient. So sometimes when you want to get a loan, right, you have to fill in a lot of papers. Then I believe you have to have a certain credit score. Depending on the country, there's a lot of bureaucracy involved. Then the banks might be down. Mm-hmm. The banks are obviously closed.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Over the weekend and so on and so forth. So DeFi tries to solve that issue, right? And tries to offer products that are available 24/7 in the market. And it's basically just code bases. So there are projects such as MakerDAO or Aave on Ethereum, for example, that have built a decentralized bank, so to say, where you can connect with your wallet. So you are the one 100% controlling your the wallet by your keys. So you store your funds there, right? And then you can use those funds in order to borrow against them, for example. Purely in a decentralized manner, or you can lend out your tokens to other people that want to trade. For example, you can lend out stable coins for, 5% or 10% annual yield, or you can earn staking rewards, for example, for Ethereum. And I mean, that's basically what a bank does,
right?
But in a more efficient way, since there is less cost and less friction involved, some of the yields tend to be relatively high. And obviously, there's people out there that just keep what we call yield farming or airdrop farming and those kind of things. But there's also people that, for the leverage trading, right? They actually borrow there, right? So they don't go to the exchange and take a margin position there. They borrow against their funds, right? Stablecoins, for example, and use those funds again in spot to accumulate additional cryptocurrencies that they believe to go up during the bull market.
Do you get better interest rates than they would from a traditional route?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pure supply and demand.
Right.
But there is nobody else benefiting from there except for small fees maybe that go to the token holders. So most of these platforms such as Maker or Aave, for example, they have a token and many times a small percentage of the revenues of the protocol go to the token holders or to the people that are willing to stake a certain token, but yeah, definitely the fees are quite attractive.
It's interesting that you mentioned that as the one. The one that I've been the most excited about was just the blockchain technology itself, like utilizing that for digital ledger type things. I just got back from Boston doing a project with the CFO of Quincy. They had just listed the first municipal bond in the United States using digital ledger technology. And that to me is something that's like really, really cool. The way you can streamline that entire process and almost make the majority of what underwriters do pretty much obsolete.
Yeah.
Like not having to worry about missing a payment anymore because it just comes out automatically. It's right to the token holders.
Exactly. I think there's going to be a lot of integration in the future between crypto and traditional finance and traditional businesses anyways, right? So it's not all about, hey, I mean, you want to make money in crypto, right? Obviously the blockchain technology itself is going to find use cases, and it's not always about tokens. I mean, obviously us as a fund, right, we want to make money, but fundamentally speaking, the blockchain technology is obviously something that can solve other problems as well, be it in healthcare, be it in logistics and so on and so forth. Because at the end of the day, like you said, it's a public ledger, right? That cannot be manipulated by anybody. And I believe there is going to be use cases there, but that's a bit less relevant for us, I would say, purely from an investment perspective.
What about NFTs? You mentioned you're mostly in like cryptos themselves, but I thought I'd seen on your website that you guys do trade NFTs a little bit, or maybe you had in the past.
Yeah, I would say it was always in our experimental stage. When it comes to NFTs, we are less interested in the NFTs themselves, but we are interested in projects that include NFTs. So for example, in gaming, that's something that might be interesting for you too, right? So with crypto now, you see this evolution from Web 1 into Web 2. Now we talk about Web 3, right? Where basically the content producers own the content. And the same is also for, it's true for gaming. So there's a lot of gamers now, they play games where they truly own the characters that they play with. They truly own all the items that they were able to.
Oh, that's what that means?
Yeah, an NFT is basically ownership. of something.
Yeah, I always thought that was just like skins or like things that you can do to like
add to the game. It can be anything really.
Or the horse racing project that that Zed Run does. Like I really like that as a fun way to utilize NFTs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where like you can actually like breed your NFTs together and like generate new stats and race them. Yeah, I love that.
But the difference is really you can trade with it, right? So in the past, if you, for example, when you played Pokemon at some point, you already had like, you know, really rare Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's cool, but other people had the same one, right?
Right.
And now everybody competes for this one unique item, or there might be just a few of them, right? And then you have been able, like you say, already to breed them and develop them over time. And then the rarity matters, right? But also the utility, maybe that that one avatar or whatever it is in the game is going to help you to win, right?
Right.
And then, yeah, I mean, either you keep winning or at some point other people might want to trade it, right? Buy it from you.
Mm-hmm.
So it clearly shows that you are the owner.
So some of the stuff on your website, like you showed some really cool use cases, like our walkthroughs of like how the research went, like how you identified the trade that you want to took, where you built your position, where the things changed and where you exited. Like it was really cool, like the way you walked through that entire process. But I didn't see anything on there about like a losing trade. I'd be really curious to see what your process looked like on a trade that didn't do what you expected to do. Can you kind of walk me through that process for you guys? Like what?
Yeah.
How does that look? When do you decide when to cut something?
Yes, it's really, like I said already, it's more on a portfolio level, but I would say on a position level, it's mostly when the fundamentals change. So we are willing to accept a certain drawdown, and we know that the drawdowns can be huge, right? And we are stomaching that by diversifying, by having mostly small position sizing for certain altcoins that we believe have a high volatility, but mm-hmm. also high risk reward. So we know it's a bit of a VC style, right? Where some of them might not truly play out. The challenge is when everything goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the most memorable times has been 2020, when COVID just came around the corner, right?
Yeah.
And this was the only true, I mean, now everybody talks about black swans here and there, right? Every small issue could possibly, let's put it like that.
Yeah.
2020, nobody talked about black swan, right? It was a true black swan because nobody expected anything. Now people are constantly waiting for the next black swan.
Right.
But then it's already not by definition a black swan anymore, right? Because black swans cannot be anticipated until they already happened.
Right, right.
So when COVID came around the corner, obviously everything went down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to risk off. We were much less exposed than usual. So we cut some of our positions. But the biggest challenge there was... everybody talked about, you know, this is the end, right? Mm-hmm. Crypto is done. Market's going to crash further, right? And I think the biggest lesson there was, especially in crypto, you should never, ever panic sell. So when the market is already down 50%, obviously it can always go down another 50%. The difference was 2020 was just a few months before the next halving. And mm-hmm. traditionally, this is actually the launch of the next bull run, right?
Right.
So we were fundamentally bullish, but short-term bearish.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very tough call to make whether we are going to risk off entirely, right? Which in crypto can be a big problem because obviously it's a 24/7 market. And even us, right? I mean, we are human, right? At some point, we are not sitting all in front of the screen at the same time and can align on what's happening 24/7, right?
Yeah.
And it's always a risk that, yes, now you're fully risked off, right? And then suddenly you wake up and everything is up 30% or 50%. So we've seen it before.
Right,
so yes, we risked off heavily in altcoins, but we did not risk off entirely when it comes to holding crypto.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed long crypto, but we were holding less of the higher risk positions. And eventually it paid off because we believe that the Fed is going to add a lot of liquidity to the market. And a lot of the drawdown was actually driven also by leverage. So it was one of the biggest liquidation events that we've ever seen in crypto.
Mm-hmm.
That's also why crypto, why Bitcoin almost went down from 10K to 3K, because there was what we call a liquidation cascade, where basically just more and more people are forced to sell, right?
Right,
right. Their collateral, which just infinitely pushed down the price to a level which was almost ridiculous, right? And I believe a few days later, I mean, or one or two days later, crypto went back up to, or Bitcoin went back up to 10K. That's the one thing. But the second thing is people got a stimulus, right?
Mm.
So in the US, people got the stimulus checks. just a few weeks after the Black Swan event. And what followed was actually one of the biggest altcoin seasons. So I mentioned earlier there was one in 2017, which was massive. Mm-hmm. But I would say the second biggest one that I can remember was 2020, which was what we call a DeFi summer. And that also was the first time that all these DeFi projects, which I explained earlier with the use cases, started to, you know, get a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And there have been tokens that went up 500%, 1,000% in a matter of weeks. So, yeah, I mean, how did we manage risk, right? That was our question.
I know, right?
At the end of the day, we stayed true to our thesis. So long story short, yes, it involves a lot of risk when you want to navigate a market cycle. But at the end of the day, we develop a thesis, which is based on strong fundamentals. And the more there is a divergence between the fundamentals and the price, the more we actually get bullish, mm-hmm. not bearish. So to the same extent that we risk off when we see that the price keeps going up, but the fundamentals cannot keep up anymore, to the same extent we get more bullish when the price goes down, but the fundamentals either stay the same or even improve.
Interesting.
So that's something that we look at. Yeah.
So when you're accumulating, then are you like an all or nothing type thing, or do you guys do like tranches? Like when it hits this level, then we'll buy a third. When it hits this level, we'll buy another third. Or
yeah. There's no one size fits all kind of response, so it really depends.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a case by case basis, right? So whether the token is already still in a downtrend or sideways, we are more patient.
Mm-hmm.
When the token is breaking out or making a retest, then obviously we don't have the time, and we are obviously going to take bigger positions.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
I like that.
So what do you see for like the future of crypto, like the next 4 years? You kind of mentioned that we're kind of in the tail end of a bull market. Or the bull run, and those tend to run in 4 year cycles. So we just had the halving, like you said. How much longer do you think this cycle should continue?
Yeah.
If the trend is going
to
hold.
Yeah. So technically, it's always around 500 to 550 days after the halving,
mm-hmm.
which would put us into Q3 or Q4 of 2025. The interesting thing there is every single cycle people talk about, this time it's going to be different.
Right.
Always everybody expects it to be shorter, actually, because people are worried. They're sitting on an unrealized profit,
mm-hmm.
and people are worried until the greed kicks in, right? And then they're too late.
Yeah.
So initially they're worried about not selling too early, and then at the end of the day they don't sell at all, because when FOMO kicks in, right, everything just keeps going up. At the end of the day, a lot of people don't sell at all. But historically, there has been a moment that this time it was indeed different, right? So if history repeats, then the cycle should still last, I would say, approximately 1.5 years.
Do you think that Bitcoin will ever challenge gold as the preferred inflation hedge?
I think so. I mean, I don't have any issues with gold, but it's just unless the trend changes, right? Obviously, Bitcoin is growing much faster. And I think there's a whole new generation that finds it a little bit difficult to invest in gold.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are people out there, right? They know exactly the use case from back in the days where, you know, gold was really a reserve asset, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where people at some point were holding gold physically at home, right? Before ETFs even came into the market. Now, more and more, everything is digital, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people are obviously chasing returns at the same time as they're also obviously hedging against inflation. But I believe to the younger people, Bitcoin is just more, I don't know, accessible.
I would agree with that. Also, I don't think that the spread is quite that bad. My dad was telling me about buying a bunch of silver for some reason or another, and he was explaining to me how the spot price and like how that whole thing worked. I was like, wait a minute, you giving up like $3 an ounce just buying it? Like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
Buy an ETF.
And I think exactly. And I think in the US, it's probably still more liquid. I can only say in Austria, like, you basically lose 20 or 30%.
Oh, that much?
If you would just buy and sell in the store, physical store, right away.
Jeez. Why is the spread so much higher there?
I think it's just not really liquid.
All right. Let's see. What else should we talk about then? I think we got through most of my questions. Do you have anything interesting you guys are cooking up over there that worth sharing?
Yeah, so I mean, we just attended a conference in Dubai.
Oh, that's
something
right.
That is interesting to talk about. So I think, especially in the Middle East right now, there's a lot of bullishness
mm-hmm.
around the crypto sector. There's always discussions in the US about regulations and so on and so forth, right? They're trying to regulate, obviously, a lot of the exchanges. And right. that, to some extent, also causes barriers of entry. And then you go to Dubai and everything is just absolutely bullish, right? Uh-huh. So Binance, for example, they can operate there, while in the US they have a very hard time. And I mean, there was also, I think it was one of the strongest rains, one of the strongest storms in Dubai in the last 75 years, right? So a lot of people had a hard time getting there, but they didn't give up. So I can see that the cryptocurrency industry is very resilient. I believe a lot of people would have just canceled, but there was a Token 2049 conference, which was packed. And then we went to the World Blockchain Summit and Untoken Capital. We had our own booth there. I think it was one of the one that caught the most attention. So we had a former Formula One racing driver also representing a Formula One simulator.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was fun for us to get out there, you know, really meet people face to face. Because a lot of people in our team are based either in Europe or in the Philippines, right, operationally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great for us to connect. And I can just say that there's a lot of bullishness in the market. And that, yeah, when you read the news, there's always a lot of negative news. But when you actually talk to people in the industry, I believe there's still a lot of investments happening. A lot of money's out there chasing new projects. A lot of tokens are still yet to be launched. That's also something for us to keep in mind. For example, in the previous cycle, a lot of the best performing tokens like Axie or Solana, they were also just launched in 2020, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is now the equivalent of 2024, basically, on a four-year cycle basis. And again, there are so many new projects that haven't even launched the tokens. So yes, obviously the time frame becomes more and more narrow.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the cycle is going to end at some point. But yeah, I mean, money always changes the fastest horse, especially at the end of the cycle. And that's something to be aware of. So a lot of the best performing tokens in the cycle might have just launched or are even yet to be launched.
It's funny you mentioned the bearishness of a lot of people. That I think most of that just though comes from not understanding it. And I know I'm one of them. I don't fully understand how crypto works, or I think I probably know more than the average person does.
Yeah.
And I know enough not to write it off. I mean, Bitcoin's been around for what, 13, 15 years now?
I think that's a big challenge. A lot of people join eventually for the wrong reason. So first they don't join mm-hmm. at all, right? They don't understand it, they're worried, or they feel like they missed out. And when they eventually join, maybe because the FOMO is already so big, right? Because at the end of the cycle, Bitcoin suddenly is all over the place, right? Everybody talks about it, but then obviously the
risk. That's how you get the end of the cycle. Exactly. You need all those people buying it.
You need, but for an individual that still wants to make money, it's obviously the worst time to join.
Yeah.
Or most challenging one, right? And then suddenly they chase.
Mm-hmm.
So they join for the wrong reason, right? Then suddenly they want to get rich quick because a lot of their friends might have made money already. And then instead of buying Bitcoin, they just buy some of the worst.
Oh, yeah.
Fundamentally.
Bitcoin's too expensive. Let me buy a Costco hot dog.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which right now might still be a good idea. I don't know if it's the last 500 days, right? But in the last few weeks of the cycle, obviously, that can be very dangerous.
Like my rule of thumb is whenever a cab driver or Uber driver or somebody on the street starts talking to you about cryptocurrency, then that's when it's time to get nervous.
Something like that. Although it changes, right? Because the adoption goes up. So it might be less of a warning next time. But those things, yeah.
I suppose Matt Damon being on the Super Bowl ads is probably another good warning too.
It was a big issue.
The only other thing that I think that would cause me concern is just... you mentioned the U.S. and being keen on regulating, and I can see why they'd want to, especially when like most of the way they exert influence is by sanctioning other people. And if you have a system that can get around sanctions fairly easily, that might be something that the U.S. doesn't really like.
Yeah, so you need to be careful because even if something's not regulated, right, there might be regulations in the future,
mm-hmm.
and it might still affect the people that already bought a token or promoted a token in the past. So that's something to be aware of, right? Just because something is not regulated, it doesn't make it safe to invest.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, technically, there is a lot of ways to go around it, right? But again, it doesn't mean it's safe to do it.
Right.
But especially with DeFi, you can do a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would still, I mean, I'm not based in the US, right? But if I'm based in the US, I would definitely educate myself on what you can and cannot do.
Yes,
the same
for
is true
sure.
for any other jurisdiction, right?
Right.
Just because the technology is there, it doesn't mean you can safely use it.
So recently we had SBF just get sentenced. Do you have any thoughts on what went wrong with that whole scenario over there? I guess I assume I look at the way your company is set up and it doesn't look like anything like that could ever possibly happen. Like how did that actually situation even happen has been blowing my mind.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's a lot of greed. I mean, they really positioned themselves as, you know, a platform built from traders for traders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very appealing narrative. And for sure, the company had a lot of expertise in the market. They gave a lot of interviews, right? And they started sponsoring and so on and so forth. And the platform itself was easy to use, right? So I think mm-hmm. a lot of people liked FTX. At the end of the day, it's all about transparency, right? So with not just FTX, but other exchanges, especially back in the days, you just didn't know what happens to the funds. Mm-hmm. I mean, now a lot of them implemented what they call proof of reserves, right? So where you can really track as well on the blockchain, whether the tokens that they claim to hold are actually in their possession.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you some sense of security. But obviously, as an institution, you would rather want to work with institutional players. And our thoughts from Unbroken, I mean, we don't really, we're quite neutral when it comes to those decisions or outcomes. The most important part for us is obviously also to observe what's happening in the industry, to learn,
mm-hmm.
and obviously always to safeguard the funds of our investors, which is obviously the most important task that we have as a fund management company.
I would imagine too that the people that you're working with when you're managing your positions or whoever the exchange that you're working with is probably a little more, I don't know what the right word, probably done a little more due diligence on that than most people would.
Yeah, so I would say in general in the industry, due diligence has changed a lot. So sometimes it takes not just days, but weeks or even months to onboard.
Mm-hmm.
It goes both ways, right? So not only us as a fund management company doing a lot of due diligence when it comes to our third parties, but at the same time, the same happens vice versa, right? So one of the credos of the industry is don't trust, but verify. Usually, the best thing you can do is to store funds only in your own wallet, right? Where you control your own keys, and so on and so forth. But obviously, to some extent, you need to have trading venues. And there, like you mentioned already, so due diligence is obviously key. And every company in the industry has their own due diligence and compliance departments.
Trust but verify. That was our motto in the Navy on the submarine.
Yeah.
Guy tells you he did his logs. Okay, I trust you, but I'm still going to check.
No, you don't. You cannot trust anyone for sure.
I know, right? All right. Well, I think we're getting a little bit close to the end here. What time is it over there? You guys are like 7 in the morning?
No, not even close, actually. It's 10:20 a.m. now.
10:20 a.m. Okay. Yeah. Oh.
Another hot day in the Philippines.
That Philippines is going to be way different than Ireland, huh?
Yeah, exactly. But I like it, but I have to say the summers are getting a bit extreme.
Yeah, that's probably going to be similar weather to like Houston, Texas, right? Just probably
more humid.
What, like 30 to 35 C, yeah. And 90% humidity pretty much all day long?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that can be brutal. All right, where can people check out things again? You said it's anbruggen.capital.com for the website.
Exactly. So I think the best approach really is to visit our website. Otherwise, people, if you have any questions, you can also find me on LinkedIn, connect or reach out, send any questions my way if there's anything. And of course, Unbroken also has its own LinkedIn page.
I'll make sure I link those in the episode description too, so people can find those. And then also, we got to say thank you to Lucas. It's always fun when you get somebody reaching out trying to set up an interview because he likes
it. Yeah, appreciate the connection as well.
I love that when that happens. Fortunately, I think it is probably time to wrap up for tonight, but that is okay, because if you enjoyed today's conversation, you still want more, go check out our guest directory. You can browse through all the amazing people we've had the pleasure of speaking with in the past. And if you want to learn more about Tomas and the fund he manages, you can go to anbruggen.capital.com. Make sure we have all those links in the episode description, and I will be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, remember that we podcasters work for ratings, so smash that 5-star rating so my family can eat next week and have a great day. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions.
The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.